All right, so we are holding on Lamed Beis. Lamed Beis, about 15 lines from the bottom. Line begins Mimakayla.
15 lines on the line.
About line begins Mimakayla. Okay. This is Gufa. Getting back to something that we started, that we mentioned before, Omer of Shimon Lakish, Shachat at the corner of Ahat of Mikvah Hareya, we said, Rish Lakish had said, if you shechted the corner, which usually, of course, you would shecht first, seeing as how it's at the front of the neck, and then, before you had a chance to shech the vesht, then a hole developed in the rea. Ksheira, in the rea of the lung. Then we said ksheira, it's kosher because effectively, once you've cut the kana, the lung has no further connection with the body, basically, in the sense that it has no more function, because the whole function is for breathing, and that whole function is gone. Therefore, he says, it's as if the lung is just sitting like in a basket, as if it's already been detached from the animal. Therefore, whatever happens, it is not going to affect anything as far as trace. So, Omar Rava, so Rava says about this, Lo Omar Rav Shimon Lakish Ela B'Reya. Now, Rav Shlakish is talking specifically about the Reya, Hoyo V'chaye Reya Sluya V'Kona, because the life of the Reya, of lung, depends on the Kona, depends on the windpipe. As opposed to Abel, but name I in Loi. However, Rish Lakish would say that the same thing would not apply to the Bnei Me'ai, to the stomachs and intestines and whatnot. Suppose that, again, you shechted the Kona first, then all of a sudden, before you had a chance to shech the Besht, all of a sudden a hole developed in one of the stomachs or the intestines or what have you. That would be different because the Chayus doesn't depend on the Kona, it depends on the Besht. Now you have some of the Rishonim learn, as the Rashba says, okay, by the same logic though, we would say if you so happen to shech the vesh first, which could happen, we talked about before, you could shech sort of from the side and end up cutting the vesh first, then maybe we would say the same principle would apply. Then we would say that the intestines are not considered to be attached to the body anymore and the lungs are. On the other hand, the Ran says no, you can only go based on what it says in the Gemara. We can't make deductions like that of our own. Anyway, the point is that Rava is saying that Rish Lakish's din would only apply to the lung. Masti for Rav Zeira. However, Rav Zeira asks on that.
A human being is considered the same. He's considered that once you cut the tongue, he's considered basically treif.
Well, I mean, yeah, the person is treifa at that point. No, he's not. I mean, he's not really necessarily dead yet. For example, I think you have in Gittin, where even if Shachat or Shnayim or Rosh Shnayim, I think we still have that he's able to still signal to somebody to write a get for his wife, and as long as they can write it before he actually dies, then it's valid. But, here we're not talking about, again, the whole shikha wasn't completed. Only the kana was cut. And the Shlokish is saying, once the kana is cut, then anything that happens with the reya is of no significance. But wait, we're not done yet.
So why do we cut the vesh, then, if you say that...
Because you need that for shikha. If you only cut the kana and then the animal dies, then it's available. All the Shlokish is saying is, anything that happens with the reya after the kana is cut has no significance as far as filth is traced. But nevertheless, the animal's still not kosher yet because you need to cut the second sim. But if you have any other traits that's developed during that point, then yeah. We discussed already at the beginning of the parable. We brought over there, yeah, we had different ways of learning exactly how whether we learned from Ois to Behemoth, or whether we learned from Behemoth to Ois, or whether we had a number of different ways.
Both
to money. Okay. So Master Sort of Data, Sort of Data says, I don't understand. Once you have simonis treifa in it, nevertheless you're saying he's kausa, nevertheless you're saying the animal is mutter based on what happened. You're saying that if the reya got damaged after the kana is shechted, then it's good. In that case, mali bereya, mali b'bnei me'ayim. Then what's the difference whether the injury happened to the lungs or whether it happened to b'nei me'ayim? Meaning, in other words, Rashi explains, Rav Zeira does not accept this idea of as if they're placed in a basket. Rav Zeira does not accept this idea that once you shechted the kana, then the lung loses its function, therefore the lung is considered as if it's already detached from the animal. Rav Zeira does not accept that concept. Because he doesn't. He doesn't agree with that concept. He disagrees with the idea, as we'll see. So he holds a concept called Ein Treifa L'Hatzichai. He holds the concept of treifa would only exist as long as the animal has its full chai. like this, you already cut one of the simonim, therefore it's already lacking some of the tires. You can't say that shreifas that happened at that point should have any effect on it. So the same way as you, Rish Lakish, are saying, according to Rava anyway, that this would apply if something happened to the Reya, the same thing you should apply it to any shreifas that happened at that point, even in the intestines or whatever. That's Reb Zeira's argument. He disagrees with the premise. However, the Gemara continues, V'hod Reb Zeira Zeira. However, then Reb Zeira changed his mind and took back what he said. So according to Rashi, what it means is that Reb Zeira takes back this idea of his Ein Shreifa L'Chatzit Chayus and agrees that there is a difference between the difference that Rava had said, between that Rish Lakish would say, there's a difference between a shreifa in the lung, puncture in the lung, for example, versus a puncture in the b'nei me'ayim. After you shechted the kana, Reb Zeira changed his mind after he had first asked this question and agreed with that distinction. And we'll see from the next piece of the Gemara how we see that Reb Zeira changed his mind.
Does he agree with Rish Lakish?
So therefore, it comes out that Reb Zeira ends up agreeing with Rava's understanding of Rish Lakish. Now that's all according to Rashi. Tosfos has let's learn a little further, and then we'll talk about that. Tosfos actually has a different understanding. So again, Rashi's understanding is that Reb Zeira is trying to argue on Rish Lakish, and in the end he ends up agreeing with Rish Lakish. Yeah. Tosfos learns that what it is Reb Zeira is first arguing with Rava, and then agreeing with Rava, but still not necessarily agreeing with Rish Lakish. So let's go through the next bit, and then we'll talk about how Tosfos understands it. Okay. But so far we have as follows. Again, Rish Lakish had said that if you shechted the kana and then a puncture or whatever happened in their lung, so Rish Lakish says no problem with shreifas because the lung is already considered detached from the animal.
Yes, it's a tiny puncture.
What do you mean? So what do you mean? Puncture is a puncture. A puncture is a puncture. The point, well, when we learn in the next paragraph about punctures in the lungs, yeah, a puncture of any size makes the lungs...
No,
make he shechted the kana. Now, after he shechted the kana, let's say, for example, somebody shot a bullet a person took out a knife and stabbed the animal in the retina. Rish Lakish is saying no problem of traces because the lung is already considered detached from the animal. Rather saying only regarding the lung, that would only work with the lung, it wouldn't work with the b'nei me'ayim. Reb Zeira had asked on that, on the face of it should work for the b'nei me'ayim as well, but then was saying Reb Zeira changed his mind and agreed with Rish Lakish's premise that we can consider it as if it's in a basket, and he takes back this idea of his ain't trace of lost tires, this idea of his that once the animal has lost half its tires and trace it can't happen anymore. Reb Zeira took that back. And how do we know that? The boy Reb Zeira. So we find that Reb Zeira asked a different question. Reb Zeira asked like this: Nikhu b'nei me'ayin bein simen lo simen mahu. What would happen if the intestines got punctured between cutting the first simen and cutting the second simen? Now again, what's the first simen? Typically, the first simen is the kana, so it's in front. Usually, the other one is the vesh, the food pipe, but usually you would cut the kana first, because it's closer to the front of the neck.
So he's
asking, suppose the b'nei me'ayim get a hole in them, get a puncture in them, between checking one simen and another simen. The question is like this. You need two simonim for shechita, but when you get down to it, when he shechted the first simen, it was on its way to accomplishing two things. Number one, any kosher shechita, as we learned in our Mishnah, makes that the animal is not metame tumas nevedim. Even if the animal was a trefa or is otherwise also to eat for some reason or another, then a proper shechita takes away the tumah of nevedim.
Yeah.
Number two, a normal shechita of an animal that's not otherwise a trefa or whatever makes it that it's mutter to eat. So when he shechted the first simen, it was on its way to accomplishing both things. On the other hand, by the time he shechted the second simen, you have a problem already. The animal became trefa because the b'nei me'ayim now have a hole in them. So now the question is, the second simen is only coming for the purpose of taking away tumas nevela. So now the question is, do they b'chlal combine together at all? If we would say they don't combine together b'chlal, would mean the animal now is nevela. Even though there was a shechita done, we would say the second simen does not combine with the first one, so therefore the animal would have tumas nevela, or maybe not. You obviously can't say you can eat it because it became, but that's the point. In other words, since Reb Zeira is accepting that you can't eat it because it has a puncture in the b'nei me'ayim, obviously that means he accepts Rish Lakish's distinction between, or Rabba's distinction within Rish Lakish between the B'nai Me'ayim and the Rei. Because otherwise he wouldn't be asking the question. Well, the fact is, he's accepting the distinction. So that's the question. So that's the question. Do we say that the first simon combines together with the second simon, that at least it doesn't have too much nevela, or not? Now, when Reb Zera asked this question, we asked on that, Lav Hainu Deboi Ilfa, isn't that exactly the same question as Ilfa asked in a different context? And the context of Ilfa's question is as follows. We're going to learn later on, the beginning of the fourth pair, that you have like this. If you shech a pregnant animal, then the baby that's inside it becomes mutter when you shech the mother. You have different details over there. We'll talk about how fully formed the baby is, but there's a basic concept, uber nitzer v'shchitasim. Well, the exact parameters of it we'll discuss there. On the other hand, we say that if the baby stuck out a limb from the mother's womb before the mother was shechted, that aver of the baby has the din of treifa. Treifa, we're going to learn in the next parak all about treifa, but in addition, we're going to learn at the beginning of the fourth parak that there's also a kind of treifa which is called boser sheyotza chutzim chitase, when you have flesh or meat, whatever, that went out of the proper mechitza that it's supposed to be. Here the baby is unborn yet, it's all of its flesh is supposed to be, all of its limbs are supposed to be inside the mother, and now it went out before the mother was tested, so therefore that limb becomes offer.
And the whole blood.
The other part, the rest of it is mutter. The rest of it is mutter, but say. So now you have, the question is like this. Ilfa asked a similar question. What happened? You shechted the first simen of the mother, where again, shechting the first simen of the mother is supposed to accomplish two things. Number one, it makes the mother and the baby mutter, and number two, it takes away tumas nevela. The second one, at least as far as that aver is concerned, doesn't help as far as being able to eat that aver, because that aver now became treifa. So the shita of the second simen as it applies to that aver is only helping as far as tumas nevela. So again, the question would be, mahu, what would be the din? Is that the first simen is helping because before the first simen, the baby didn't stick out anything. So the first simen would accomplish the mother is mutter to eat, the baby is also mutter to eat. Then in between the first and second simen, the baby stuck out its hand. That hand, we say now, is treifa. So you're not going to be able to eat it even after you finish shechting the mother, because that's the basabasa of a treifa. It's considered that it went out of its proper place. Basada means like it's outside of its proper zone. So over here, therefore, so now when you shech the mother's second simen, as far as this eva is concerned, the only thing that it's accomplishing is that eva won't have too much neveva. So is it even able to do that? Or is it mitzadaf with the first simen or not? That's the question. Mi mitzadaf simen lishon simen sheni latara midei nevela eloi. Same question. So why is Reb Zera asking the question again when Ilfa asked the exact same question? And he asked it as far as an uber. Reb Zera is asking it as far as the animal itself. Same difference. So the point is, it's similar enough. And even Ilfa is only asking as far as the question, and even Ilfa, or Reb Zera for that matter, is only asking as far as the question of whether it's Tahar from the point of view of Nevela. Obviously Reb Zera accepts that it's also to eat. So, because again, it's the same as Ilfa's question, and then there we know that the Aver is also to eat. So therefore, in other words, Reb Zera obviously accepts that once the Nemeayim have a hole between the first and second simen, there's no question you're not going to be able to eat from this animal. The only question is this animal nevela or not? Does the first and second simen combine to at least take away too much nevela? We see from that question, therefore, that Reb Zera changed his mind. First, he had asked why should there be a difference whether there's a hole in the lung versus in the Nemeayim, because after all, once you started shechting, then there shouldn't be any trace of hafichayus. Now, since Reb Zera asked the question that he asked over here, then obviously it means he changed his mind and accepted that there is a difference. If there's a hole in the Reya, then fine. The animal can still be kosher. But if there's a hole in the B'nai Me'ayim after you cut the Kana, then not. So therefore, we
can't. The question doesn't mean that.
The fact that he asked the question means that he accepts the premise that the animal is also. Otherwise, it's a different question. Yeah, otherwise, he wouldn't ask the question. Yeah, otherwise, he wouldn't ask the question whether the second simon combines with the first simon. If they combine together and the animal is mutter to eat, how much more so it combines as far as so much tomato? Okay.
According to the topic, after he cuts the
windpipe,
the foot sticks out.
That's not that according to the Shlokish. That's the Mishnah says that over there. That if the Uber sticks out its foot or whatever, then that foot is also to eat. The question is only that Ilfa is asking, what if it stuck it out between the first and second simen? Does that foot later on have the status of Nevela or only of Tresa?
And it doesn't have a status.
That you can't eat it, that's for sure.
Yeah,
right.
But it doesn't have a status of Nevela.
That's the question.
No.
That's the question. Exactly. Okay. So the Gemara, okay. Almost later of Akhba.
You can infer from the Uber to the mother?
Yeah, why not? The point is that Rav Zera is asking the same kind of question as far as the animal itself, but meaning the same way as with Ilfa's question, we accept the premise that the foot is also to eat. It's only a question whether it's Tres or Nevela. The same way in Rav Zera's question, it's also, the question isn't whether you can eat this animal. The question is only whether it's Tres or Nevela. Also to eat it definitely is, showing that Rav Zera accepts that if you cut the kana, you cut the first simen, and then the b'nei me'ayim develop a hole, that the animal will be also. Okay. However, amalei Rav Acha bar Rav l'Ravina, no, not necessarily. Dilma la'olam le'hoder bei, maybe Rav Zera did not actually change his mind at all. Maybe, in fact, Rav Zera himself would still stick to his principle, ein treif al hafi chayus, that once you already took away half the chayus of the animal by cutting one of its simonim, no question, the animal itself, the treifas are not relevant anymore. The animal cannot become treifa at that point, he would say. The only question is nevela or mutter. Why is he asking the question? Because you could say, word of Zera, word of the Rava comma, Rav Zera is asking, according to you, Rava, that you hold this distinction between the kana and the b'nei me'ayim, so what would you say if the b'nei me'ayim developed a hole between the shechting of the first simen and the second simen? Would it be, according to you, would it be treifa or would it be nevela? I would hold. It would be completely mutter. The Leilai Svirali. So he himself wouldn't hold that way. So he's only asking the question within Rava's opinion. So therefore, no proof that Rav Zera changed his mind. Okay. All of that is the way that Rashi learns the Sugya. Tosfos. La'olam loy hoderbe. Actually, Rav Zera did not change his mind. Rav Zera l'dvarav d'Rava kama. Rav Zera is only asking within Rava's opinion, who distinguishes between the Reya and the B'nei Me'ayim. So according to you, Rava, that's the B'nei Me'ayim, developed a hole between cutting the kana and cutting the vesh. According to you, Rava, it's author, because treifas are still relevant at that point. So the only question, according to you, is would it be treifa or would it even be nevela, because the second simon doesn't combine with the first one. Me, Rav Zera, would say, I still hold any treifa l'chafi chayis once you took away half
the
chayis.
What's the purpose of asking if he didn't change his mind?
Because he's asking, according to you, Rava, what would you say in this case? Would it be...
He would say exactly what he said before.
No, he would say, the question would be, Rava might say, fine, in that case, it's only a treifa. The second simon will combine, the first and second simon will combine, so that takes that, there was a valid shechita, therefore it's not nevela, it's only treifa. Or he might say, you know what, you're right, actually, in that case, the first and the second simon wouldn't combine, because they're doing different purposes. The first one is meant to accomplish two things, take away Thomas nevela and make it mutter to eat. The second one already is not able to make it mutter to eat, because it's already treifa, according to me. So the question is, does it even combine together? Maybe not, and the animal is nevela. Rav Zera could be asking a question, what would you, Rava, say in this case? Velele spirele with that, but he himself would know that. All of that is Rashi's explanation of the Sugya. Tosfos now comes and has a different explanation. According to Tosfos, what it is Rav Zera starts out arguing on Rish Lakish. This concept that Rish Lakish said that if you cut the kana and then nikla reyach shera, Rav Zera is arguing with the whole concept. Then what we're saying is that we have the second question of Rav Zera. What Rav Zera changed his mind on is the second question. Not like Rashi is understanding that Rav Zera changed his mind on the first question, that he says, why are you making a distinction between Reya and B'nei Me'ayim? There shouldn't be a distinction. And then he changes his mind based on a second question. But rather, Tosfos learns the other way around. He changed his mind and decided, you know what, my second question is not relevant because I still stick to my opinion with the first one, that there's no difference between the Reya and the B'nei Me'ayim. and therefore it comes out. According to that explanation, it comes out. So again, the answer is, he's saying, that, according to you, Rava, according to you, but then again, the answer is, in other words, according to Tosfos, Rav Zera the whole time is sticking to his opinion that Rav Zera the whole time is sticking to his opinion that yes, Tosfos lachasichayus, but there could be Tosfos even when one siman has been shechted. So what are you telling me, Rish Lakish, that because the kana has been shechted, therefore there's no more Tosfos in the lung? All Tosfos should still apply. And then when he's reading after, he asks this other question. Then he takes it back. But the Gemara says maybe he's only taking it back according to Rav. You, Rava, who are saying there's a difference between the Reya and the Bnei Me'ayim, then you can ask the question to what happens if the Bnei Me'ayim were punctured. But me, I would hold that the Shreifas would apply whether the Kana was cut or whether the Kana, not the Kana, whether the Reya was damaged or whether the Bnei Me'ayim were damaged after you cut the Kana. He argues with Rish Lakish's whole premise. And in fact, the Poskim passed him like Tosfos' understanding, and they passed him like Rav Zera Lachumra. But yes, if the animal developed a hole, whether in the lung or whether in the Bnei Me'ayim, after one simon is shechted, yes, according to Tosfos' understanding, Rav Zera is saying Tosfos still fully apply there. Yes, Tosfos lachasichayus, which means therefore that there is a Reya, there is Bnei Me'ayim, and therefore that any Tosfos in them are relevant, and therefore the animal will be Tosfos. Well, whether it's Treifa or Nevela is not really so Negea nowadays, because practically speaking, we don't have Malkus for one or for the other. There are sometimes some Nakaminis in Halakha between Treifa and Nevela, one of them being a question whether you have to do Kisi Adam, but at any rate, they do pass him like Rav Zera, according to Tosfos' understanding of Rav Zera, that the animal in this case is Treifa. Fine, the two Simonim will combine, but the animal is Treifa, and you can't eat from it, because of the hole in the Reya or the Bnei Me'ayim between one Simon and the second.
According to Rashi, two Simonim do not combine.
According to Rashi, Rav Zera is asking whether the two Simonim combine, and then we're saying, because he asked that question, that shows he changed his mind, and realized that there's no such thing, this Ein Treifa for Chatzi Chayus, according to Tosfos, it's the other way around. Okay. Fine. Omer of Acha Bar Yaakov, Shmamin Omer of Shimon Lakish, based on what Rish Lakish is saying, we can learn a din as follows. You're allowed to, now again, Rish Lakish is saying, as we said before, that once you cut the kana, then the reya, the lung, is considered as if it's completely detached from the animal. Now, the result of that, therefore, would be, you would be allowed to invite a yid over to join you in eating Bnei Me'ayim. Bnei Me'ayim means, according to Rashi, doesn't just mean the intestines over here. Here it means any of the internal organs, including the lungs. However, based on what the Shlok is saying, you would not be allowed to invite over a goy to eat Bnei Me'ayim, to eat lungs or other internal organs. My time, what's the logic? Like this. Bnei Me'ayim, again, according to Rashi, means over here not just the intestines, not just stomachs and tishkis and whatever, it also includes the lungs. You would be allowed to invite a yid to eat lungs with you, but not a goy. Why? My time, Yisrael de b'shchit etalya milta. Because when it comes to Jewish people, the key thing is, was the animal shechted? Well, kiven de ikka shchita mal yisa. Well, at the end, you have a proper shchita. Not talking about a case over here where a hole develops in the middle or whatever. A regular case, you shechted both simonim of an animal, and now, therefore, the animal is dead. Fine. You shechted the animal. You did a proper shchita. You cut most or all of the two simonim. Good. Kiven de ikka shchita mal yisa. So once you did a proper shchita, good. Ishtar ilahu. At that point, everything in the animal becomes mutter. Well, not everything, whatever. The chalav, obviously not, but whatever. The parts of the animal that become mutter become completely mutter. As opposed to going, don't have a mitzvah the way they have to shech the animals. For them, it's enough to kill the animal any old way, for example, by stabbing. Therefore, for them, the key thing is the animal actually being dead. Therefore, you have a problem, therefore, having a goy eating them. A goy would not be allowed to eat them. Because effectively, according to what Rish Lakish is saying, the lungs are considered evim and achai. Because as soon as you cut the kana, the lungs now are considered as though they're detached from the body. For a goy, the fact that you complete the shchita is neither here nor there. These lungs were effectively detached from the body before you finished the shchita, before the animal was dead. Therefore, they remain Eber Menachai. therefore the goy is not going to be allowed to eat them. So if you were to invite over a goy to eat them, you would be over on lifnei eiver, because the goy has an issur to eat eiver min achai, and you're serving them something.
For a yid, we're saying...
For a yid, we're saying all you need is a shechita. So yeah, when... The truth of money. So fine. When you cut the kana, then at that point the lung is considered detached from the body. However, then you continue cutting the second siman, and at that point, once you finish cutting the roiv of the second siman, at that point, the lungs and everything else and the animal become mutter for a yidhi. But a goy would say, and there's no such thing as shchita for them, it's just a matter of the animal has to be dead. Well, the problem is you cut the kana. Cutting the vesh later on doesn't change anything as far as the goy. The kana effectively has been removed from the animal. It's as if you cut the kana, physically remove the lung, then continue cutting. So therefore, it would be a minachai for the goy. The fact that you left it in there until the animal is dead doesn't help. Because now you mess about shchita.
A goy, even when you shecht both simanim or one simanim?
That's what we're saying. Even if you shechted the kana first, which is the usual way of doing it, it would come out, the lungs would always remain also for the goy, and therefore you can't invite a goy over to eat them. That's what Rav Acha bar Yaakov is saying. You can deduce this from what Rav Shlakish is saying. Okay. Omer of Papa. Hold on.
What?
Okay, wait. Okay, again, the logic is, according to Rav Shlakish's concept, that as soon as you cut the kana, the lung is considered to be removed from the animal, then that's it, it's removed. There's no way of having it be part of the animal anymore. And therefore, for the goy, it becomes also the animal's still alive, and even later on when it dies, it's as if the lung was already removed before it dies, so it's eichem minachai. So for a yid, because for a yid, it is still present in the animal, and for a yid, you need shchita. So once you cut the second siman, the shchita has been accomplished. Now that lung becomes mutter to eat. Okay, but for a goy not, because as soon as you cut it, then there's no way of making it back be part of the animal.
A yid is allowed to eat only after two simanim.
A goy is allowed to eat only when the animal is dead.
Because
once you cut the one simen, and therefore it's considered that the lung is detached from the animal, then that's it. There's no putting it back into the animal. It's detached. It's permanently detached from the animal. It's as if you took it out. But it's as if you took it out before, yeah. You want to look at the Rashi, Midrash Lakish. But the difference is, here, look at the Rashi, Midrash Lakish. Midrash Lakish, based on Rish Lakish, the Omer Kivin Shinechtach Kana, he says once the Kana is called Habereya Tepancha B'dikola, then the lung is considered as if it's in a basket. Shmamina, based on that, we can see, Ein Mezamnin Ovid Zuchabma B'nei Me'ayim, Nishum Reya. Why? Because you're not allowed to feed him lung. Why not? Because the zipper was taken out from the animal while it was still convulsing at the end of the shchita. A goy's heter to eat meat does not depend on shchita. So by him, shchita is not relevant. The eiver menachai nesalayan. On the other hand, eiver menachai is also to them. The ein yotzalahem yidei eiver menachai atchamut. The only thing that makes a piece of meat not eiver menachai is when the animal completely dies. Therefore, but it's considered as if it was already removed. That's the point. For a yid, yes, it's considered detached, but since necessarily shchita involves cutting one siman and then the other, then that means it's as if this thing was detached from the animal, but then, let's say, put back in and became not eiver menachai anymore, and then he cut the second siman, and now it becomes mutter with the shchita. So therefore, it works. But for a goy, it doesn't work, because once it was detached...
You would be allowed to the line of the animal with... That it had the first
human. No, of course not, because you haven't finished the shchita yet. But once you finish the shchita, then it becomes mutter. But for a goy, that second siman doesn't help anything. It was removed and not replaced. Omer of Papa, have you sidna kamezer of Achaba Yaakov? So the Papa says, I was sitting as a Talmud in front of Achaba Yaakov, who said this thing, who said this verse that we just said, uboid emalei, and I was going to ask him as follows. How is it possible? Where do you ever find something which is mutter for a yid and also for a goy? But v'loy amile, but Rav Papa says, I didn't actually ask Rav Acha bar Yaakov this question. Damina, I didn't ask him this question. How is it possible that this lung is also for a goy if it's mutter for a yid? Where do we ever find something that's mutter for a yid and also for a goy? So Rav Papa says, I wanted to ask him the question. Beloy amule, but he says I didn't actually ask him the question. Damina, because I thought to myself, there's no sense in asking the question. Ha time, after all, he said a logical reason. So yeah, okay. Usually we would say that you never have such a thing as mutter to a yid and also to a goy. The rules for goyim are supposed to be more lenient than for yidden. But okay, Rabbi Acha bar Yaakov has a valid point over here, so maybe, yeah, maybe the halacha is like him.
After
Mabul. After Mabul, even Achai is also to them, yeah.
But there's more of a, sometimes there's a certain
sense
that for yin, it was more
lenient than for goyim. That's what Rabbi Acha bar Yaakov is arguing here, effectively. Now, Tosfos points out, there are other things. And then Sugi and Sanhedrin, that talks about the Sheva Mitzvos Bnei Noach, you have, for example, the Gemara says, what about a yid is allowed to marry a yifas toyar? A goy, if he captures an Eishes Ish in battle, is not allowed to have relations with her. So you see, there's an example where something is more stringent for goyim than for Jews. Tosfos says, but the Gemara says, but the logic is, because goyim don't have, when they conquer, they don't have the same rights of conquest as Jews. So therefore, Tosfos says, you can use the same logic over here. Shitta is not relevant to goyim, therefore, yeah, you can come out with what Rabbi Acha bar Yaakov is saying, that you come out with a chumrah of goyim over Jews. Not that you should expect to have a chumrah of goyim over Jews, but because the relevant din, kibush or shitta, as the case may be, doesn't apply to them, therefore it results in a chumrah. Which would, in this case, would be Edmund. However, the Gemara says, Tanya deloike Rabbi Acha bar Yaakov, we learn a braisa not like Rabbi Acha bar Yaakov. Because the Braita says, "Haroyt the lech from a behemah koyim to take the nafsha." If a person wants to eat meat from an animal before its soul completely leaves it, in other words, before it completely stops moving, and the Gemara is going to say soon it's healthy to do that. How do you do it without being over on Eidim Nachai? Choysach kezayis bosom of beis hashkita. You take off a kezayis of meat from the area where it was shechted. The advantage of doing dafka from the area where it was shechted from the neck is you're not supposed to strip off the skin. Other parts, you would first have to strip off the skin, and that takes time. Here, you want to eat it quickly, so you take from the neck area, where the skin is loose, so it's easy to remove it. Umocha yafa yafa, medicha yafa yafa. You salt it well, you rinse it well. So at that point, you cut off a kezayis bosa from the neck area, you salt it, you soak it. Umamtin lancha keita nafsha. You wait until the animal completely stops moving. And then you're allowed to eat that piece of meat. So it was taken off the animal while it was still moving around, while it was still effectively still alive, so it was still convulsing around, but you're only eating it after Shiketa Nasha. And this would be more... What?
It takes a half an hour.
Okay, so if it takes a half hour, then you got to wait a half hour. Meanwhile, he's busy soaking and salting it. Echad, Ovid Kachavim, the Echad, Yisrael, Mutarin, and whether it's a goy or whether it's a yid would be allowed to eat it. So you see, this Braisa says, not like Rabbi Acha bar Yaakov. If it was like Rabbi Acha bar Yaakov, you would have the same problem, maybe not.
So therefore,
we see a Braisa not like Rabbi Acha bar Yaakov. Okay. Messiah Leilat of Iji Ba'ovid. Okay, this that we just quoted from this Braisa about this idea of cutting off a piece from the neck before the animal was completely stopped moving supports what Rabbi Iji Ba'ovid said. The Amr of Idi Ba'ovin, Amr of Yitzchak Ba'ashian, Haroysa Shiyavri, if somebody wants to be healthy, that's how he should do. Haroysa Kazayis Batum Be'esh Chitasa Shabaheva, Umocha Yafa Yafa, Medicha Yafa Yafa, Umamtin Lancha Keita Napsha, and Echad Ovid Kachavim Ve'echad Yisroel Mutonin, whether a Yid or a Goy would be allowed to eat it. So again, well, but the point is that first we quoted a Braisa, now we're saying that Idi Ba'ovin had said it as a statement of Amuroyim without referring to the Braisa. Now we see there's a Braisa that says exactly the same thing. Yeah, because apparently it's healthy to be able to eat from the animal right before to be able to take a piece of meat from the animal before it completely dies. Yeah.
So you have to salt it.
We said that. Yeah. We said that. Fine, but the point. Fine, but it depends how long it takes for it to stop moving. But the point is,
we say that you're supposed to can take meat after it stops shuffling.
Of course, you could take meat from that, but then it won't be as healthy. The point is, the healthiest teeth is when it's still moving around, when there's still a little chaos in it. Now,
then you're allowed to take it then.
Exactly what you said. Now the Rambam paskins like Rav Acha bar Yaakov, after all, that a goy is not allowed to eat. That a goy would not be allowed to eat from meat from such a thing that was taken off from the animal before tasting nafsha. And it would come out, and it would come out, according to the Rambam, also, it would mean, effectively, in this, the halacha is like Rish Lakish. Just like we said before, that as far as Tresis, the halacha, we said before, that you have Rishonim who learn the halacha is like Rish Lakish, and then you have others who learn the halacha is like Rav Zeira. they learn that Rav Zeira is arguing with Rav Lakish, as we said. So according to the Rambam, a goy would not be allowed to eat from the lung after the kana was shechted, because of the problem of Eivim Nakai. Many of the other Rishonim disagree with the Rambam on that, again, because the Gemara did say that after all, you don't find that you should have something also to a goy and musa to a yid. It's not logical. So therefore, they passed in, like the Braitha and like everything else that we're saying over here, that a goy is allowed to eat.
Who's that?
So the tour, for example, passed them that way. So yeah, so that's the Rambam would hold that a goy is not allowed to eat meat from an animal that was cut off while the animal was still moving around. Everybody else says he is. Therefore, the Rambam would say that you can't invite a goy over for long for the reason that we said, and then everybody else would say that you could. No, even after. If it was cut off while the animal was mafasis, according to the Rambam, the goy is never allowed to eat it.
And the yid?
A yid would be allowed to. But again, for a yid, once it was shechted, then that's it. Yeah. You have a famous explanation that says that this was the root of one of the arguments between Yosef and his brothers. You have the famous thing that it says, what did Yosef, when it says, Vayavah Yosef, he bought them raw, that Yosef was giving bad reports about his brothers to Yaakov. What are the bad reports? One of them is that they were eating Eivim Nakai. So one of the explanations is based on our Gemara over here. If Yosef held that the brother is at this point, it's before Matan Torah, if he held that all of the family are still considered B'nai Noach, they're not yet Jews because the Torah hasn't been given, then they're not allowed to eat from a piece of meat that was taken off according to taking off. That's fine. Nevertheless, you still have a way of looking at it that they're still considered B'nai Noach, as far as because the fact is, they may know the whole Torah, but they weren't yet commanded it by Hashem, so therefore, arguably, they still have the status of B'nai Noach, as far as dinning like this. You have other things, you have famous things that talk about how Abraham could be Mekayim Mitzvah Sittis if a goy is not allowed to observe Shabbos, whatever, you have different things like that, the different lumbish things like that, but one of them is, so Yosef were held that they're considered B'nai Noach, so they're not allowed to eat meat from an animal that was taken off before chasing Nakshah. They would have held, were already considered Jews, were allowed to, so therefore, as far as Yosef is concerned, they're eating Eiv Menachai, and that's what he's reporting to Yaakov. And that's a famous explanation.
I'm telling you, why is a yid allowed to eat it?
Because a yid, Shchita was done. Shchita was done.
Even though it's not tasting
nafsha. But he has to wait to actually eat it until tasting nafsha, but to cut it off from the animal, he can do once it was shechted. That's the point.
Once it's shechted.
The nerves. Right. That's the point. Mishnah says, suppose a person shechts a behema or a chaya or an oath, and no blood came out of it. The animal is still kosher. What's the chiddush in it? There's a number of points that are chiddush in it. It could happen. So one thing is, we learned at the beginning of the parak, we had, Rabbi Yehuda said that you have to cut the veridin, at least in the case of a bird. It could happen. You shechted the simonim without cutting through the veridin. So therefore, no blood comes.
Then
we said that the veridin are veins or arteries or whatever. The point is, it could happen. But the point is, what's the chiddush of it? The Rambam says the point is, the chiddush is, you shouldn't say maybe the animal was dead beforehand. No, you don't have to worry about that.
Therefore,
if no blood came out, you could think maybe it was actually dead. But yeah, you have other explanations, including one of them is we're talking specifically a chaya or an oif, where you have a mitzvah to do kisui adam. Nevertheless, the fact that you didn't have blood for kisui adam doesn't affect things. Okay.
It's still considered.
The shchita is still kosher. V'necholin b'yadayim, also another point of it that Rishonim say is the chiddush is, you'll still be able to soak and salt it in the usual way. We're not to worry that so much blood is absorbed in the limbs that you're not going to be able to get it out with normal soaking and salting. No, we don't have to worry about that. V'necholin b'yadayim m'sto'avet, you're also allowed to eat meat from such an animal with hands that are tamed. In other words, without washing. Even though when your hands are usually considered sheni l'truma, you're allowed to eat. Forget about it. Normally, if you don't wash your hands, nor stam yadayim, or medu abanan are considered sheni l'truma. You're allowed to eat meat from this animal with tamei hands, l'fishalai hukshara b'dam, because in this case, the meat didn't, there's no hechshara l'kabal truma, because to be mukshara l'kabal truma, it has to have gotten wet with one of the seven mashkin. One of them is blood. Well, there was no blood, therefore there was nothing to be mashed. That's the point. Only because of that. Mind you, I mean, so okay, the Rosh asked first of all, Tosfos points out, I mean, this means you'd only be able to roast it. If you're going to be soaking and salting it, you're soaking it in water, so therefore, inevitably, okay. Or Tosfos says, okay, maybe it could mean you soaked it, maybe you could soak it in juice instead of in water to before and after salting it, whatever. Anyway, the point is that the Rosh points out another point also. Okay, so let's say it was Mokshul HaKabal Tumah. So what? You're allowed to eat Cholin Nerachame. What's the problem? So why does the Mishnah have to say only because it wasn't booked for the Kabbal Tumah? And one answer is, the point is, even let's say the person wants to eat Tumah afterwards, you could argue maybe eating this Tumah food would make him Tumah. But over here, it's not Tumah, because it can't become Tumah, because then it's not Mukhshul HaKabal Tumah, therefore there's no problem with eating Tumah after it. Even though, as we're going to learn on Omid Beis, there is a Gzeira D'Rabbanan, a person eats Tumah food, they become Tumah, but here, the food didn't become Tumah, because there's no Mukhshul HaKabal Tumah. That's the point of the Mishnah.
I'm sure one, when you start salting, it's blood will come out.
Okay, so that's, again, that's Tosfos' point, that if you're going to roast it, then you don't need to soak it at all.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. The blood comes out because it gets very hot.
Okay. Rav Shimon Omer Huchshu B'Shchita. Rav Shimon says, no, it became Muchshu L'Kabal Tumah just by shechting it. Since Rashi says, since the Shchita makes it mutter to eat, it makes it into meat, in other words, it takes away the issue of Eidim and Achai, so it also makes it food as far as Tumah, as far as Tumah B'Tahara is concerned, even if there was no actual blood.
That all food is
Tumah. Okay, but now, basically he's saying, like this you had, let's say for example, with fruits or vegetables or whatever, fine, they were mutter before, they're mutter now, as opposed to this was also before with Eidim and Achai, now the Shchita had the ability to turn it into something else, that is no longer Eidim and Achai, therefore Rav Shimon says it also has the ability to make it that it's Mukhshul HaKabal Tumah. Okay, you have other explanations as well, but anyway, okay.
If
it's not Mukhshul HaKabal Tumah, if it didn't become wet with one of the Shiva Mashkin, after it became food, then it can't become tummy. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Time of the Layos Mahendam. So what are we saying? That's what Rav Shimon is saying. That just the Shchita alone is able to make it Mukhshul HaKabal Tumah, even if there's no blood. Whereas the Tanakhama says you have to have blood, otherwise it's like dry food that never became wet. Okay. The Gemara starts off. Time of the Layos Mahendam. So what are you telling me? Why are you able to eat this, or are you able to eat this meat even with tummy hands? We said because it wasn't Mukhshul HaKabal Tumah. So what does that mean? Ha yotzei mehen dam ein ne'achol miyadayim mesu'avos, implying that if blood had come out, which is normally the case, implying that you would have to wash before you eat them because your hands are sheni l'tumah. The question is why? Am I? Yadayim sheni yotzein. Your hands are only a sheni l'tumah midrabanan. The ein sheni oitzei shlishi b'chulin. And when it comes to cholin, there's no such thing as a shlishi l'tumah. The furthest it goes with cholin is a sheni. Yes, but when it comes to cholin, you don't. The reason why we have to wash our hands before bread, we're going to learn later on in our Masechta. We're going to have a whole sugya later on in our Masechta about the dinim of Mechilat Yadayim before bread. Technically, the reason why you have to do it is only it's called Mishum Tzrach Truma. The Chachamim wanted to get you used to washing before cholin because you might mistakenly do the same thing, eat without washing Truma, and then you have a problem because Truma can become a shlishi, Nevertheless, the takana still exists. Because in general, when the takana makes a takana, yeah, basically, we'll talk about it. You should strap trauma. But anyway, the point is that in and of itself, there's no reason to wash for cholin. So let's say blood did come out. Let's say this meat was mukhshul HaKabal Tumah. What's the problem? Even if you touch it with sheni hands, it's cholin. It doesn't become a shlishi. So the Gemara says, and we're ma'id b'cholin askin. And okay, how do you know our Mishnah specifically is talking about cholin? Maybe indeed our Mishnah is talking about kodshim. The answer is the katani chaya. Because we see our Mishnah also mentioned a wild animal. The kodshim, chaya b'kodshim yikah. There's no such thing as a wild animal for kodshim. Kodshim are only domestic animals or birds. And that's one proof. The two, and another proof we have that our Mishnah is talking about kodshim. What do you mean, iba kodshim? If our Mishnah was talking about kodshim, what do you mean, kilo yotzei mehen dam kshera? What do you mean if no blood came out, where it would be kosher? How would it be kosher? Who asked me the dam would start? The whole point is, any kodshim, you need blood to sprinkle on the mizbeach. And otherwise, it's not a valid carbon. If no blood came out, you don't have valid carbon. You're not going to be able to eat from it anyway. Because I don't know if the show is we're not talking about kodshim. And the two, and a third proof, if you were going to say our Mishnah was talking about Kodshim,
right?
These are all questions. These are all proving that our Mishnah cannot possibly be talking about Kodshim. If you were to think that our Mishnah is talking about Kodshim, first of all, that wouldn't explain the Chaya. Number two, it wouldn't explain how you could eat from them without any blood coming out, because what are you putting on the Mizbeach in that case? And number three, Iba Kodshim, if you were going to think our Mishnah is talking about Kodshim, Ki Yosem Ehen Dam Mi Machshir. So even if blood did come out, would it make them Mukhshul HaKabal Tumah? Well, Amar Rav Chiya Ba'aba Amar Rav Yechanan. Minayin ladam kodshim she'enin machshir. How do we know that blood of kodshim is not machshir l'kabal tumah? Even not just if it falls on the meat. Rashi says even let's say blood of kodshim, let's say falls on other food, it won't make it machshir l'kabal tumah. Why not? She'nemer ala oris tishpachenu kamoyim, because the pasuk says when you shech the cholin animal, you have to pour out the blood on the ground like water because you're not allowed to eat it. Implying dam shenishpach kamayim machshir, only blood which is meant to be poured out on the ground like water, only that is machshir l'kabal tumah. blood that's not meant to be poured out on the ground like water, namely blood of kodshim, which is meant to be sprinkled on a mizbeach, ainin machshir, it's not machshir the kabbal tumah. So therefore, so that's the third reason why our Mishnah can't be talking about kodshim, because if it did, even if blood came out, as it normally does during shita, they still wouldn't be machshir the kabbal tumah. The only way for them to be machshir the kabbal tumah is if one of the other mashkim or blood of cholin or whatever fell on them. There too, and yet a fourth too, Eva Kodshim, if you're going to think our mission is talking about Kodshim, you're going to ask the other way around, Kilo Yosemehem Dam Vandiskashri. So you're arguing that even if blood, that you're saying in the mission that if blood doesn't come out, they're not Mukshala Kabbal Tumah. They should be Mukshala Kabbal Tumah regardless whether blood come out, because the Skashri B'Chibas HaKodesh. They should become Mukshala Kabbal Tumah on the grounds of Chibas HaKodesh, which is a concept that we learned about in Menachos, which is that sometimes we say that even things that are not capable of becoming, of being a Kabbal Tumah normally when it comes to Chulin, but when it comes to Kodshim, they are. We talked about over there even things that are not food. For example, we said wood or labayna is able to become tamei on the grounds of chibas hakodesh, even though chibas is the belovedness. Oh. Because kodshim are something precious, are something important. Therefore, they have a special din that they're able to be makabel tumah even not under normal circumstances. Rashi brings over here from a Gemara and Sakhin. So therefore, the Kaimalon Chibas HaKodesh Machshartem. We know a concept that Chibas HaKodesh makes things Mukshal HaKabal Tumah, even if they didn't usually undergo the things that would make them Mukshal HaKabal Tumah, or even if they're not food at all. For example, Eisim and the Lion. Rashi brings over here a Pasuk on that, but the Gemara in Stockholm brings a Pasuk Ve'HaBosar, explaining, and we learned this in Menachos as well, comes to include also Eisim and the Lion, that they're able to be Makabal Tumah even though they're not food. But Rashi apparently learns that it is Daraisa. You have other Rishonim. I think Tosfos talks about it over there, that maybe the whole concept of Chibas HaKodesh is only Dirabanan. Be that as it may, whether it's Daraisa or Dirabanan, things are, meat of Korbanus, like many other things of Kodshim, are able to become Tumah even if they weren't Moksha L'Kabal Tumah. So our Mishnah couldn't be saying they're not Moksha L'Kabal Tumah because there's no blood. Chibas HaKodesh would make them. So obviously, because of these four proofs, obviously our Mishnah has to be talking about four.
So according to
some Rishonim, it's not. According to Rashi, it is.
Yes, he's talking about
Kulim. Kodshim, we're saying.
Kulim.
No, okay. Therefore, because of these four proofs, that proves that our Mishnah must be talking about Kulim.
Right.
Now that we know that our Mishnah is talking about Kulim, now we're back to the question. So what is the point of the Mishnah? What is the point of the Mishnah that if blood had come out, you wouldn't be able to eat this meat with tamei hands? Why not? The worst you're going to do is make it a shlishi. There's no such thing as shlishi by pulling. So what's the problem? Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Baravua, Hacha b'cholin shalach from the kesef ma'isa. We're not just talking. Yes, we are talking about cholin, but we're not just talking about any other kind. We're not just talking about any old kind of cholin. We're talking about cholin that you bought with ma'isa sheni money. We're supposed to take ma'isa sheni money and spend it on food and eat the food in your shalayim. And you have an opinion that says that such chulin that have the kedusha of ma'aser sheni, that shlishi applies to them. Therefore, the loyka of Meir. So it means our Mishnah, therefore, is not like a Meir. It's not. Namely, we learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Parah. One second. We learn in a Mishnah like this. Kol atoron v'yach mayim midivrei sofrim. Anybody who midrabanon has to toivel, anybody who midrabanon has to toivel, and that includes, there can be cases where the person has to toivel his whole body, but you also have a case, for example, where a person's hands become tummy. Midaraita, there's no such thing as tumas yadayim. Midaraita is either your whole body is tummy or nothing is tummy. No such thing as your hands by themselves being tummy. The whole concept of tumas yadayim is drabanon. So therefore, so yeah, that would be an example. Rashi brings some other examples. Let's say, for example, midaraisa, liquids that are tamei cannot be metamei kalim. Midrabanan they can. You have, for example, a person has his head and most of his body goes into mayim shorim, into drawn water, not mikvah water. Midrabanan it becomes tamei. All these cases, midrabanan he has to total. So these are all part of the gzeiros yud ches dover. These are all part of the same 18 gzeiros that the Shammai outnumbered Vesul and they passed these 18 gzeiros. So all of these things, kolat chon bain, bi'asmai midivrei sofrim, mitame es hakodesh, kolat chon bi'asmai midivrei sofrim. Any case where midrabanan, a person has to tovel, or tovel his hands, or whatever, or wash his hands, or whatever the case may be, mitame es hakodesh, if he touches kodesh, he will actually make it tamei, because let's say, for example, a hand or a sheni latoma, kodesh will become a shlishi latoma, and that's called tome in the sense. In general, in Gemara terminology, we make a distinction between tome and posel. Tome means something that's able to be metame something else. Posel means that it itself is tome. You're not allowed to eat it, but it can't make anything else tome. Truma goes only as far as shlishi. So by truma, shlishi is called posel, because you're not allowed to eat it, but it won't make a revit. But by Kodesh, we call Shlishi Tome because it's capable of creating a Revi. If that food touches other food of Kodesh, it's going to become a Revi. So Matame is a Kodesh. This person with a Sheni Latruma, he's Matame Kodesh, he makes it a Shlishi. Or Poisel of a Truma, he passes Truma also by making it a Shlishi. Umutub Cholon of a Meister, Divrei Rav Meir. Rav Meir says he will be allowed, the Pasha means to touch or to eat, Cholon or Meister, Divrei Rav Meir. Whereas the Chachamim say he'll be also to eat Meiser. So the Chachamim hold, therefore, that there is a distinction between Meiser and Cholin. So when our Mishnah, which we established that our Mishnah is talking about Cholin, so obviously it can't be talking about plain Cholin, because then there's nothing to talk about, there's no Shlishi. We have to be talking about Cholin that were bought with Meiser Sheni money. The Chachamim would hold that if the meat was Tomei, you would have to wash before you eat it, because otherwise you're going to be Matamei and make it a Shlishi. Rav Meir would hold nothing doing. You know, there's no swing of a Shlishi by Meiser, or by Cholin, or by Meiser. So therefore the Mishnah would have to be according to the Chachamim. However, Maskifa Rav Shimi Ba'ashi, however Rav Shimi Ba'ashi says, Mimai, who says that that's the correct explanation? Who says that we have to say that our Mishnah is only according to the Chachamim, not according to the Meir? Dilma adkan leitzligi rabbanon alei the Meir ela ba'achilas meiser. Maybe the Chachamim are arguing with the Meir only about whether the Tomei person mid rabbanon is allowed to eat meiser. Maybe when it comes to touching meiser, or when it comes to eating cholin, maybe they're not arguing. Now, our Mishnah is saying he can't touch it, with Tomei hand. So, but maybe the Chachamim are only saying, somebody who's a sheni, or his hands are a sheni, but Rabbanon, he's not allowed to eat Meiser. Asurin b'Meiser would mean, Oistrim b'Meiser would mean he's also to eat Meiser. Not necessarily that he's also to touch it. And Rameyer would say that he's mostly to eat it as well.
Is that a difference in touching
eating? Yeah, there's a difference. Because, for example, you could have, eating could be, for example, that somebody else feeds it to him without him touching it. So he sticks it into his mouth, for example, yeah. Now, Tosfos, by the way, says that Rav Shimi Ba'ashi is using the word Dilma, which means like the Gemara is bringing up a hypothetical, maybe this is the case. Tosfos says actually that is the correct explanation. That actually we find in other Gemaras, such as in Chagiga, and in fact, that is exactly what Rav Meir and the Chachamim are arguing about. They're not arguing about whether this person who's a sheni can touch Meiser. They're arguing about whether he can eat Meiser. So therefore, no proof that our Mishnah is according to one or the other opinion of that. So therefore, we have to understand our Mishnah differently. Okay. So the question is, So how do we know that our Mishnah is talking about touching rather than eating? How do we know that our Mishnah is talking about touching? Our Mishnah used the expression, they may be eaten with Tomei hands, but they may be, not he may eat them, but they may be eaten, which is a different way of expressing it.
Yeah.
So obviously that must mean, our Mishnah must be talking about a case, where somebody else is feeding it to him. And then we're saying that because there was no partial metabolic trauma, because no blood came out, therefore he's able to, implying that if not, then he wouldn't be able to. But therefore we see that the only problem is that the problem is not him touching it. The problem therefore is him eating it without somebody else touching it. In other words, the idea is, rather what it is like this, in other words. It sounds like our Mishnah is saying that even the friend whose hands are a sheni, if it was moksha v'kabel tumah, if blood came out during the shechita, as it normally does, he wouldn't be allowed to touch this food to give it to somebody else to eat. Now, why not? Neither the Meir nor the Chachamim, according to what we just said, holds that touching mice would be an issue. They only, the Chachamim holds eating it as a problem. The Meir says not even that. So who would our Mishnah be like? Then it wouldn't be like the Meir and it wouldn't be like the Chachamim.
Because yes, you feel the Chachamim.
Yes. But our Mishnah is using the expression me'echolin, meaning in other words, that we're talking about a person with tomei hands picking up this meat and giving it to somebody else to eat. That doesn't work according to the Meir or according to the Chachamim. The Chachamim, yes, exactly. Ela, Amar Rav Papa, so Rav Papa says you're right. We can't say that our Mishnah is talking about a case where a person's hands are shaken. You have to be saying that we have to be talking about the case of our Mishnah is where the person's hands are not a shame l'truma, but rather a grisha l'truma. So now, it still is true based on the proofs that we said before that our Mishnah, therefore, is talking about cholin, not kachim, because we already established can't be talking about kachim. But nevertheless, if the person's hands are grisha l'truma, then yeah, the chachamim would say that he's not, then if we're talking about cholin that was used, that was bought with mice and money, then yeah, he's not allowed to touch it. Because I'll make it a shame l'truma. And even cholin, shame l'truma applies.
Can't touch the dead body?
Ah, that's what we're going to talk about. Hold on. No, because if he touched a dead body, he himself is Ava Tumma, right? No, we're gonna explain in a second. Okay. So therefore, Rav Shimon ben Alavi. So we're saying that if, we're not talking about his hands are ashamed, because then, yeah, there's no way to make it work.
Because
it has to be that we're talking, because then he should be able to touch it. There's the only problem, it should be according to the Chum either. So we have to talk about where his hands are Rishon LaTumma. We're gonna talk in a second how it could be that his hands are Rishon LaTumma, but first, Rav Shimon ben Alavi. Namely, therefore, we have to say our Mishnah goes according to the opinion of Rav Shimon ben Alavi. The time, yeah, as we learn in a Braisa, Ein Yadayim Tchilas B'Cholin, we learn in a Braisa, whenever we talk about that a person's hands are Rishon L'Truma, it's never relevant as far as Cholin. In other words, the Tanakhama of this Braisa is saying that, like this, there are cases, as we're going to discuss in a second, where your person's hand can be a Rishon L'Truma, but when it comes to Cholin, we ignore that. As far as cholin is concerned, we consider as if they were shiddus, as if they were ashamed of the truma. Therefore, we can touch cholin freely. Only as far as truma and kodshim are they considered a rishon the truma.
There's never any rishon for cholin, we're saying?
No. There is such a thing as rishon for cholin. For cholin, you go down as far as shame. But according to the Tanakhama of this Braisa, if a person's hands became a rishon the truma, and we're going to discuss in a second how that could be, then if he touches cholin, he will not make that cholin ashamed. The Chachamim, who imposed the Tumma on his hands and said that his hands will be a Rishon, will say that that doesn't affect Cholin. As far as Cholin, it's as if his hands are ashamed. So he can touch Cholin, no problem. Only if he touches Tumma or Kodshim will he make them ashamed of the Tumma. Here we're talking about Cholin that was bought with Maisa Shani money. So therefore, one second. So Rav Shimon ben Alavi Omer Meshurma Meir, you're dying chilas v'cholin, or shniyas v'truma. No, this case of a person's hands are a rishon v'truma, they will be a rishon, chila is another word for rishon. Chila is another word for rishon, yeah, because it means like the beginning. There'll be a chila, there'll be a rishon as far as cholin, or shniyas v'truma. And there'll be a sheni as far as truma. What is that? Like Mara says, what do you mean? Chilas v'cholin ain v'truma loy? What do you mean? They're only a rishon v'truma as far as cholin, not as truma? Truma is more stringent. No, halchik karma, right. What do you mean? Just chilas af v'cholin. When it comes to cholin, Rav Shimon Alaza says they will be considered a rishon. If he touches cholin food or cholin bought with mice ashamed money, he will make it a shame. Shneis l'truma ein l'cholin loy. When it suppose a different case, if his hands are shneis l'truma, then it only affects truma, then it doesn't affect cholin. That's what he means. But in other words, Rav Shimon Alaza says that if a person's hands are rishon l'truma, even cholin will be made a shame. Therefore, that's what our Mishnah is talking about, therefore. His hands are a rishon l'truma. Now we're saying, because the meat didn't become moksha l'kabel truma, because no blood came out, therefore he's able to touch it with his rishon hand, and no problem, because he's not going to be able to become tamei. But if the meat had become wet with blood, as it usually would, by shvita, then if he touched it with his rishon hand, they would become a sheni. And we're saying, if it's colon that was bought with ma'aser sheni money, that would be awesome, because you're not allowed to be in the tamei, ma'aser sheni. So that's the case that our Mishnah is talking about, but only, it would only work according to the Shimon Alaza, because again, according to the Chachamim, his hands are not considered a Rishon relative to Cholin, only relative to Shulman. No, forget about Reb Meir. That was a different Machloikas. Now that was a different Machloikas, because he said even Reb Meir wouldn't have a problem with him touching it. But that's when his hands were shady with Shulman. You were talking about his hands are a Rishon with Shulman.
But we said after that we couldn't talk about it.
We said that we're not talking anymore that his hands are shameless from him. Now we're back to that his hands are a rishon from him. Right. So that's where we say that Reb Shimon Alaza would say, yeah, also in the name of Reb Meir, that if he touches cholin, he will make it a shame. That's what we're going to talk about next. So the question is, where do you ever find hands of a person that are rishon l'truma? All the various cases where the Chachamim said a person touches something and his hands become tamei. For example, a person touches Sifrei Kodesh, for example, you have different other things that a person touches. they're all his hands become a shame of the Truma. Where do you find a case where a person's hands are a rishon
Truma? Either he has an avak or a shame.
Basically, that's what we say. Either it's an avak Truma or a right. So, yeah, or he's, yeah.
Or he's a shame.
Yeah. The answer is A. Yes, you can find such an example. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, it's actually a Mishnah, so the Tanan maybe it should be. Hichnis yod of Levayis HaManuga. Now, we have like this. We know that a house that has Sarah, if a person goes into that house, he will become Tomei. And if he stays a certain amount of time in that house, today after the Sarah, then his clothes will become Tomei as well. The question is, what happens in this case? He just stuck in his hand, like through the window or something, into a house. Yod of Chila is Divir Rav Akiva. Rav Akiva says there's a case where his hands will be a Rish in the Truma. So there you go. There's a coincidence of Rav Akiva. You have a case where a person's hands can be Rish in the Truma. The Chachamim say no, his hands will only be a shame in the Truma. So, let's work out.
What's the house that has
Sarah, so it's locked up for a while. It's a source of Truma. The house itself is an Avah Truma. The house itself is a Kamek. No, because you have a mess is an Aviyah Truma, and when a person touches it, he becomes an Avah Truma. A Bayis HaManuga is an Avah Truma. A person goes into... So that's the thing. You have a slight distinction with a house of Sarah, where if he just goes in there and stays in there for a few seconds, then only he is Tomei. His clothes that he's wearing remain char. If he stays in there, the amount today after the Sarah, then his clothes become that he's wearing become Tomei again. But anything else that's brought into the house becomes Tomei right away. Okay. So, what's the Zera?
That's his whole body.
Well, only his hands went in.
Yeah, but
by his technique, it didn't him. No, so that's what we're saying. So, Dekulei Alma, so the Gemara says, here's the machlokes, it's as follows. Both the Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim agree, Bia b'mitzvah lo shma bia. They both agree that partial coming into a place is not really considered coming in. In other words, only if his whole body went in there, only then would he be Tomei on a Daraisa level. We're talking about over here, this case of a house with Sarah. They both agree that just sticking in his hands does not make his whole body tummy on a jaraisa level and not on jarabam. V'hacha b'gzera yodam atu gufoi kamifu. The machloikas of Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim about whether his hands are rishin or shein l'tumah is, do we make a gzera about his hands because we may confuse the case where he put in his hands with the case where he put in his whole body? Rabbi Akiva holds his hands are like his body. So therefore, if his whole body had gone in there, he would be a Rishon L'Truma D'Oraisa. Therefore, if he put his hands in there, we make his hands the same as his body.
Yeah, right.
In other words, his body, fine, will be Tahor, because the rest of his body didn't go in.
The
whole concept that a person's hands should be Tahor by themselves is Derabah. So if he had gone in there himself, his whole body, definitely his body would be a Rishon L'Truma D'Oraisa. Therefore, Rabbi Akiva says, if he put in only his hands, Midaraisa nothing would happen, because Diyah B'mitzvah is not Shmei Diyah. The only reason we're making his hands Tomei is only a Gzera D'Rabban. What level of Truma are we imposing on them? Rabbi Akiva says, we're putting the same level of Truma on them as you would put on his whole body had his whole body been in there, he'd be a Rishon L'Truma D'Oraisa. Therefore, he put in his hands. Therefore, his hands are a Rishon L'Truma. That's Rav Akiva. Well, Marasova, you're dying to Alma, Shavin Rabbanan. Whereas the Chachamim say, okay, but every other time where the Chachamim put Truma on a person's hand, it's always Shein L'Truma. Therefore, over here also, we're not going to say it's any different. We're going to say that his hands are not similar to his body. True, if his whole body had gone in, he'd be a Rishon L'Truma. Because now we're only making his hands Tomei, because he just put in his hands, and Daraisa, there's no Truma there at all, only the Rabbanan is there a Truma. We're going to put on him the same Truma as would be if his hands became Tomei from touching a Sefer Torah or any other thing.
But
they
want to figure out why he doesn't do his hands?
Because Rabbi Akiva is saying that his hands have to be similar to his body. If we're making his hands Tomei, then it should... Yes, so it shouldn't be confused, right. Okay. Fine, so here we have an example where a person's hands can be a Rishon L'Truma, according to Rabbi Akiva. Okay. So the point is, once we establish there is such a thing, and we had before Braisa, Rav Shimon Elazar, who said that if a person's hands are a Rishon L'Truma, meaning in this scenario of Rabbi Akiva's, then we're saying that he, that then we're saying that 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 as far as chulin, his hands are also considered a rishon, and if he touches chulin, he makes machine. Fine, that's what our Mishnah is talking according to his opinion. So the Mishnah is according to the Shimon ben Elov. According to the Shimon ben Elov. So that's the question. Why are we saying only according to the Shimon ben Elov, the loik makrib akiva gama yod of tefillah tavyan, given that the whole thing is based on Rabakiva's shita about how a person's hands can become a rishon l'tumah, why not better say that our Mishnah is like Rabakiva, which is preferable anyway, because in general, we know that Sam Mishnah is like a mayor, and Sam Sifra, and Sam Sifri, and Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Shimon, and so forth, and the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, behold, all live with Rabbi Akiva. All of them learned from Rabbi Akiva, and all of them are basically according to his shita. So in general, a Sam Mishnah should be assumed to reflect Rabbi Akiva's shita. So why are we trying to say that our Mishnah is specifically according to the Shimon Elazar, when we could better say that it's according to Rabbi Akiva?
According to Rabbi Akiva, in this scenario, because of my shame money is the...
We don't know what Rabbi Akiva would say about my shame because we didn't say. But once we know that Rabbi Akiva holds the concept of hands being rishon l'tumah, let's assume, therefore, that Rabbi Akiva would hold that if he touches chulin with rishon hands, then the chulin becomes a shame, and that would be the scenario of our Mishnah.
And he wouldn't be allowed to.
That he wouldn't be allowed to, right, that he wouldn't be allowed to touch it because he's being mitami my shame, right. The answer is it wouldn't work according to Rabbi Akiva. Yeah, so that's the question. The loyt makar Rabbi Akiva dama yod of tefillah tavyan. Rabbi Akiva himself is the one who says that his hands can become a rishon l'tumah. Why not say our Mishnah is like him? The answer is dilma ki ka'amar Rabbi Akiva hanimila the trum of a kodshim b'chamir. Because maybe only Rabbi Akiva is only talking about as far as truma and kodshim, which are more, which have a chumra. Aval l'cholin, we don't know, but aval l'cholin shniya tavyan. Maybe as far as cholin, he would agree with the Chachamim who disagree with Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, that even though we consider his hands a rishon, as far as cholin, we treat them as if they were shame. They won't be retaliated the cholin at all. So therefore, we can't say necessarily that our Mishnah goes like Rabbi Akiva. Maybe Rabbi Akiva would agree with the Chachamim. Maybe Rabbi Akiva would say, like this, you had before, in the previous Braisa, both Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar and the Chachamim who disagreed with him agreed that there's a concept of a person's hands being rishon l'tumah, which means they both agree with Rabbi Akiva's premise that if a person puts his hands into a house with taras, they become a rishon l'tumah. They were arguing, what does that do as far as cholin? Would those rishon hands make the cholin sheni, or would they make the cholin nothing? Maybe Rabbi Akiva holds like the other opinion. Maybe he doesn't hold like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. So Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, we know, clearly says that they make cholin a sheni. Therefore, our Mishnah definitely can go according to him. We don't know whether we can make our Mishnah work according to Rabbi Akiva.
That's why we said
it's like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar.
Right. You say the behavior is up to the body or up to not the body?
Yeah, well, that's up to Rabbi Akiva, okay. Okay, but maybe Rabbi Akiva. Right. Okay. Fine, so the question is, the Lehav Yanami Shmias, okay, so what's the problem? We could still make our Mishnah work according to Rabbi Akiva for a different reason. Let's say Rabbi Akiva would hold that, like the Chachamim who disagreed with Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, that a person with rishon hands, as far as cholin, those hands are considered shame. Only as far as Stroma and Kodshim, would we say, are they considered rishon. Fine, we could still make our Mishnah work according to him. We find Rabbi Akiva saying, unlike what we've been saying all this time, that we've been saying that with cholin it only goes as far as sheni, Rabbi Akiva disagrees with that and holds that cholin you can have shlishi.
We
have evidence for that. The Tanan, as we learn in a Mishnah in Sota, Boy Bayoim Darash Rabbi Akiva, Boy Bayoim, which is on the day that they appointed Rabbi Elazar and Azariah as a Nasi, and the Gemara says over there they added hundreds of benches in the Bismedrish because many new Talmidim came. So therefore, when they clarified everything that was still outstanding, so Boy Bayoim Darash Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva Darashid as follows. You have a pasuk that says, V'chol Kli Cheres V'chola, the pasuk says, if a sheres falls into a Kli Cheres, for example, into an oven, which is made out of earthenware, and the pasuk says, Kol Asher V'Secha Yitma, whatever is in it becomes Tomei, but he says, he focuses on the word Yitma. Tomei Le'nemar, it doesn't say whatever is in the oven is Tomei, which would mean, in other words, the oven becomes a Rishon, because the sheres is an Ava Tomei, the oven becomes a Rishon L'Tomei, whatever is in the oven becomes a Shein L'Tomei, but if that's all the pasuk meant, it would have said that whatever is in the oven, Tomei. Instead it says Yitma. Tomei le'nemar ela yitma means batamei achei. Yitma, no, yitma means that he learns as if it said yitamei, that it's able to be matamei other things. It means it's a sheni still, because the oven is a rishon. The oven, the sheres is an av, the oven is a rishon, the food is a sheni. Okay. The sheres that falls into the oven is an avatoma. The oven itself, the earthenware of the oven now becomes a rishon. anything that's inside it, any food that's inside it becomes a shame. But Rabbi Akiva is saying, since it says on that food, which is shading the truma, yisma, we read it as if it said yitame, l'tame achayim. It means it can be mitame other things. Limid, Rabbi Akiva says, from this teaches us, al kisa sheni, about, for example, a loaf of bread that's a sheni l'truma, shu oitis shlishi b'cholin, that it can make a shlishi l'truma b'cholin. So Rabbi Akiva disagrees with the premise that we were saying the whole time, that by cholin you only go as far as sheni. So therefore, let's say that Rabbi Akiva holds, again, Rabbi Akiva is the one who says, that if a person puts his hands into a house with saraf, they become a Rishon Latruma. We're saying maybe he doesn't agree with Rishon and Elazar that he would make Cholin Hasheni. Maybe he holds like the Chachamim that he wouldn't make Cholin Hasheni. Okay, but since Rabbi Akiva himself holds, we see from that Mishnah in Sota, that by Cholin there's such a thing as Shlishi, very well. So he'll say, like, the person's hands are a Rishon Latruma. As far as Truma and Kodshim, they're still considered a Rishon, and he touches them, he makes them a Sheni. As far as cholin, his hands are considered a sheni l'truma. However, he touches cholin, he makes them a shlishi, because it's such a thing as a shlishi by cholin. So our Mishnah could still work according to Rabbi Akiva. Because, again, if we're talking about cholin that were bought with ma'ase sheni money, you're not allowed to be mitame then. So therefore, that would be the case that our Mishnah is talking about. Or that our Mishnah is implying. So our Mishnah could still work according to Rabbi Akiva. The answer is, dilma hani mila b'truma jaraisa. Fine, but you could still argue that Rabbi Akiva would only hold of this concept that there's such a thing as shlishi l'truma when it comes to cholin. Maybe he would only hold that that applies to a truma which comes from daraisa. For example, a sheris is a truma daraisa. But when it comes to a truma which itself is only drabanan, again, we established, no, well, save it, but also this case where he stuck his hands into a bayisam and fine, a house is paras, this is a truma, but it's daraisa. But midaraisa, the truma is only if he completely goes in. Bia b'mikseth lo shema bia, we said. So over here, the whole concept that his hands are tameh is only the rabbanon. Maybe Rabbi Akiva would not say his concept of shlishi b'cholin in that case. In things where the original tumah is only the rabbanon. Only in things where the original tumah is daraisa. So we still have no reason to say that our Mishnah would necessarily be according to Rabbi Akiva. Therefore, whereas we know for a fact we can make it work according to Rabbi Shimon HaLazar, because Rabbi Shimon HaLazar makes no such distinction. He says always the hands are rishon, always he's going to make cholin a shame. Daraisa, there's really no such thing as his hands being a rishon, only his whole body being a rishon. But whatever, the point is that, yeah, he'll make even if only his hands are rishon, which is necessarily is drabanan, he'll make cholin a sheni, and if those cholin were bought with ma'ase sheni, then you have a problem. So it's clear that our Mishnah goes like a Shimon HaLazar. It's not so clear whether it works according to Rabbi Akiva, maybe, maybe not. And therefore, we didn't say that it's like Rabbi Akiva.
The Gemara says, for Rabbi Akiva, the Tumah Daraisa.
Right. So if it had been an original Tumah Daraisa, yeah, that's what Rabbi Akiva is learning in the Mishnah. And closer. But they were dashing from the word Yitzma that you can have a Shlishi B'cholim. But maybe Rabbi Akiva would say, when the original Tumah was only Dirabbanan, like in this case, where his hands are Tumah, only because of Zera Dirabbanan, we're not going to go so far as being Machmir as making a Shlishi B'cholim. And our Mishnah would be talking about that, because he said it was talking about his hands are Rish and the Tumah. So therefore, we don't know whether Rabbi Akiva would say that makes a Shlishi B'cholim or not. Therefore, we can't necessarily say our Mishnah is like Rabbi Akiva. And we know that our Mishnah is only talking about cholin, not kodshim, so therefore we don't know whether Rabbi Akiva would agree with our Mishnah, but we know Rabbi Shimon will agree with it. Okay. So yeah, this is the beginning. We're going to have a couple of blocks over here. We're going to have a couple of concentrated blocks over here of dinim of Tumah B'Tahara. Before we get back to issues of shchita and cholin and everything. So yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Indeed. Yeah.